You're listening to the Old Time Radio Show on 71K News Talk Radio. Now back to Denver's Old Time Radio History buff, John Dunning.
And I am delighted today to have Dennis Day from the Jack Benny program and his own program, A Day in the Life of Dennis Day, and from various other things which we will talk about as we go along, from his home in you're in Los Angeles?
That's right, John. Happy Easter.
I was going to say the same thing to you. Happy Easter.
We got a rainy one here.
Our producer, Kathy, says he sounds the same as he did on the radio.
Oh, yeah. Almost.
When I talked to you 3 weeks ago, you had a much deeper voice. Did you have a cold?
I had a cold, yes.
I had
just gotten back from the Midwest, and I had a real bad cold, which I took from California, and I never got rid of it in the Midwest. And I came back here, and I had to go back again to the Midwest. I was doing the home show in Milwaukee. And I went from there into Plymouth, Michigan, and then from there into Wichita, Kansas. And then back to California. I thought sunny, but it's very, very wet.
When you say you're doing the home show, what are you doing on that?
Well, I do a regular thing about, you know, not only singing, but talking about Jack Benny and all the people involved in the show. And, of course, my association all those years with Jack Benny, which was 25 years. And I reminisce about Jack and Phil and Mary and Don Wilson and Rochester and all the people that were involved in the show. So I do singing and lots of stories and things like that, you know.
Did you start out to be a singer first or an actor first?
I started out as a singer. I was the new singer on the show replacing Kenny Baker. And that's what I was. And then that's why the fact that they brought in Verna Felton to play the part of my mother, who was the buffer between myself and Jack Benny, because I was so inexperienced. Remember, I was fresh out of college. I'd never been in show business. I'd loved singing, been a singer in college in the Glee Club, and I had appeared on several radio shows in New York City, where I was born and raised, and been on the Larry Clinton campus, Saturday night campus show, three times, and I had taken air checks of the songs I had sung on that show, those three shows, and I happened to, after Kenny Baker left the Benny show, somebody suggested I send it over to Jack's agent, which I did, and by good fortune, God bless her, Mary Livingston happened to hear my record. She liked it. She brought it to Jack, and she persuaded him to audition me. After the audition was over, Jack said, well, that sounds pretty good, but we'll let you know. And about two or three days later, I got a round-trip ticket to go out to California on the Golden State Limited on the train. It was the Freddie Laker of the trains, you know, no frills, no nothing. And I got out here, and I auditioned for his writers and producer. And after that, I was told to wait around for a while because Jack was going up to the World's Fair in San Francisco on Treasure Island.
Oh, yes.
And I did that. I waited around. They gave me no money, mind you. Told me to wait around. I had to send home to my mother and dad for some money.
This is your real mom, not Verna Felton.
That's right. And then when after he got back, I got a call from him to come down to his office. And it was at that meeting that I knew that I was going to be the new singer on his radio program. And, of course, it wasn't when I signed the contract, mind you, but when he took back the other half of the train ticket. And that was true.
Well, that's great.
Took back the other half. Well, the office did, you know. But I stayed with him all those years. It was a two-week contract. It was actually a five-year contract, but I had to make good in 2 weeks. And if I didn't, he had the option to drop me. Then the first year, he could pick me up every 13 weeks, which he did. And I stayed with him, as I say, up until Well, I stayed about 4 years, and then I went in the Navy during World War II.
That's when they had Larry Stevens.
And that's right. He had Larry Stevens. And after I got out, I went back with Jack, and I had my own radio program at that time, The Day in the Life of Dennis Day. So all those years, I stayed with Jack, and with a wonderful, beautiful association. A nicer man never lived. Not only nice, but a beautiful, a great man, a genius as far as comedy was concerned. It was amazing. I used to get a big charge out of going to the rehearsals because you knew it was going to be fun. Everybody enjoyed it. And that was the beauty about the Benny Show. Nobody had any jealousies or anything like that. If you got 3 laughs or 5 laughs, whatever it would be, you knew you were going to have the greatest of material on that show. And after all, it still was the Jack Benny Show.
He was very generous about sharing the laughs.
That's it. Well, that was the whole success, I think, of Jack Benny, because he never hogged the show. He was the catalyst. He was still, no matter what they may say, oh, did you hear Phil Harris on the Jack Benny Show? Did you hear Don Wilson or Rochester or Dennis Day or Mary Livingston or Mel Blanc or Frank Nelson, any of the people? Did you hear them on the Jack Benny Show? He was the one who was the catalyst who moved the whole show, and it was still, he was the star of the show.
There was a story which I picked up and helped push along that you impressed Mary with that yes please routine. Is that true?
Well, that's true. I impressed Jack, actually. At the first audition I did, I had sung for about 15 minutes in NBC Studios in New York City, Rockefeller Center, and I had sung for about 15 minutes, and they were up in the control booth, and I heard over the loudspeaker, Dennis, you can take a rest. And then about 2 or 3 minutes later, I heard, oh, Dennis, and I said, yes, please. And Jack told me later, much later, after I was with him on the show, he said, you know, that was one of the things that impressed me so much, that this is the type of a person that I wanted on the show, and this is the one who I would want. So I guess being polite or whatever it would be, paid off in its way, because Jack took a chance with me, and I stayed with him, as I say, and it was a beautiful, happy, wonderful relationship.
When you went into that audition, how many other singers were there? How tough an audition was it?
Well, all I know is that there were probably over 500 singers that they were auditioning or listening to recordings of their voice. That's what Jack and Mary and the agents told me later. They had auditioned over 500 singers. There were lots of other singers that were in contention with me, several from Canada and quite a number from our own country, you know, who were in contention for the job because it was a very important job. He had Kenny Baker, who was a very big star at that time, and he had been made so by the Jack Benny program.
Do you know why he left?
He was the one who left, and everybody said, now, all the critics and everything said, who can follow Kenny Baker? Because he was a tremendous star at that time. Jack's first singer, at least before Kenny Baker, would be Frank Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And he had quite a number of other singers besides that. He had James Melton in the beginning. He had somebody else. And he had a number of singers, even after Kenny Baker left, he had auditioned quite a number of singers and tried somebody on the program, and they didn't work out, and then I got the opportunity, and thank God, it worked.
Did Jack make the final choice himself?
Oh, yes. Jack made the final choice.
With some input from everybody else, but he made up his own mind.
He got a little input, a lot of input, let me say, from Mary Livingston, his wife. She was the one who thought, Jack, go ahead and take the chance, you know. And Jack was guided by her intuition, and also her feelings on the whole situation, and I was fortunate enough that she liked me and persuaded Jack, you know, to take a chance.
Okay, it's 4 o'clock. This is John Dunning. We're talking with Dennis Day in Los Angeles on KNUS in Denver. And we're being brought to you by the Public Service Company of Colorado. And I have a while I was talking, a listener called in, and I was passed a question. Listener wanted me to ask you, when you were telling all these jokes about your mother, was your real mother alive, and how did she take that?
Oh, my mother was very much alive, and they were very proud of the fact that I was successful on the Jack Benny Show. My mother was the exact opposite. In other words, she was a very retiring, very wonderful, sweet little Irish woman. God love her and God rest her. And she was really the exact opposite of what the character of Verna Felton was on the Jack Benny Show, because that had to be a strong personality. That's why Jack brought her in, was to protect me and also to give me the opportunity to become used to being on radio and to be able to express myself. Remember, I was fresh out of school, and I really had no experience to speak of. And for me to get on, you know, I remember the opening program when she said, "Say hello to the people," or Jack Benny said, "Say hello to the people." And I said, "Hello to the people," you know, with that silly voice. And the mother, he said, my mother said to me, "Dennis, let me fix your tie, you know, before I sang," and everything else. And Benny said to her, "Mrs. Day, this is not television." And she says, "Mr. Benny, you're quite fortunate." You know, that's long before there was television.
That was what?
Imagine, that was 1939. Of 1939.
Yeah. Well, they had been talking about television, I believe, since about 1930, weren't they?
Well, they were talking, but there was nothing. After all, there was no television to speak of. Television was, they had some small stations, WCAU, I think, out of Philadelphia, and then some in New York. As a matter of fact, after the World War II, I went back to New York with the Benny Show and also to do my own show. And I did a TV show in New York. And that was in a little studio no bigger than, it was maybe about 8x8. And I lip-synced back to one of my old recordings. Now, that's how primitive it was. Hmm. And then all they were doing was just trying out, you know, for color of people and how they looked and camera techniques and all of that. So, of course, we didn't have color then either. It was only black and white. But it shows how primitive it was. Here I was lip singing. There was nothing live. So this was back in 1946, early 47.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it started really to catch on at about 1949. Benny did his first in 1950. So he'd do maybe once a month. And even when Jack went into television, he wasn't sure of what he was going to do in television. The first couple of shows, he was floundering, really, not sure of what direction he was going to take. And then he went back to the old... really what he did in vaudeville, doing a monologue in the beginning and then bringing in the other characters and everything else and doing sketches, more or less.
Do you keep in touch with the folks from the show?
Oh, yes. I did 7 months with Don Wilson, which we finished up a year ago this past August, the big broadcast of 1944. With Harry James, Don Wilson, of course, was the announcer. And we had Hildegard, Fran Warren, Gordon McRae, Carmen Cavallaro, the Ink Spots, the Pied Pipers, and, of course, myself. And we played 8 months. We played a month in Detroit. Then we went to Philadelphia, Boston, Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco. We were back east then for about 8 weeks playing... the theaters in the round. In other words, in Cohasset, in Boston, outside of Boston, down the Cape. And we were in Buffalo, North Tonawanda. We were in Long Island.
Why did you come to Denver?
I wish we had been able to come to Denver.
I could have drummed you up some business.
Well, I'm sure it was a very expensive show because Harry James carried 18 musicians with him, and it was quite expensive, but it was a really fine show, and I was sorry to see it come to an end. But unfortunately, I guess the producers figured they weren't making enough money on it.
Mm.
In fact, they claimed that they didn't really, they just about broke even. But we had great receptions. I mean, it was amazing, not only from the older people, but from the young people. Because here they were jitterbugging in the aisles. And Harry James, I must say, still plays a fantastic trumpet.
Yeah.
What a great orchestra he had. It was just superb.
How about Phil Harris? Do you...
Phil, I saw Phil, I just saw him last summer up at the Bohemian Grove. I'm a member, and so is he, of the Bohemian Club. And I usually see him at that time, and he's in great shape. Amazing. Don Wilson did have a little bout. I understand he was in the hospital, but he's out now and he's fine. He had a little heart trouble. But Don Wilson is 82. And Phil Harris, I guess, is, he's got to be 79. I was the kid on the show. I was the youngest. And this May 21st, I'll be eligible for Medicare.
Oh, dear.
All right, George, 65.
65.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Hello there, boy.
Or as Dennis Day on Jack Benny's show would say, congratulations, I think. Something like that.
Well, I'm thankful for all the great, wonderful things that have happened to me in my life. And I've got a wonderful family and a wonderful wife. And I've been very fortunate in this business. And my voice is still there, singing-wise. And when it starts to go, that's the time I will leave. But I still, as I say, I just did about 3 weeks in the Midwest, and I'm going up into Nevada. I'll be up there for a weekend at the end of this month, and then I've got several things to do in May and June, so I keep active.
What kind of groups contact you? You mentioned a home show to do these kind of things.
Well, they're people all over the country put on home shows, you know, which are, of course, the emphasis today is on do-it-yourself, you know, type of thing. People are not selling their homes, or they're redoing and adding on additions and all of that. And these are home shows that promote that sort of thing, all the new things that you can get to put into your home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very successful. And they were very happy because, you know, we are in a recession and business has been bad all over. But they were very, very happy. We had people, my gosh, they were coming out of the walls all over. And not only that, the exhibitors were very happy because people were buying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what they were very happy about, which is a good indication. Maybe the recession has bottomed out, and hopefully that things are going to get better.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm much more of a pessimist, probably, but I sure hope you're right.
Well, I think there's too much pessimism around right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's down. I think we've got to have a little optimism.
Mm-hmm.
And think, well, you know, things can't get much worse. They got to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So,
give it a chance.
Yeah, but I think we got to get a hold of ourselves and pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, you know.
You know, when I think of the classic malaprop type roles in which, I think when everybody does, in which a character appears to be a dumb character, but actually there is a twist of logic there, and it makes sense underneath it. You always think of Marie Wilson, Gracie Allen, Jane Ace, Probably because they were women, but your role on the Jack Benny show was probably more that than any of those, or as much as any of those.
The logic to what all the silly, naive things I did, and sometimes they were downright stupid, but the logic was simply to annoy the hell out of Jack Benny. I remember one script where I went over to Jack Benny's house and I sang the song, which I usually had to do every week, sing the song I was going to sing on the following Sunday's program. And I went over there and I sang the song, and after I had sung it, Jack says, "Dennis, that'll be fine." And I said, "Well, thank you, Mr. Benny, and I got to go now." And he showed me to the door, and as I was about to leave, I turned and I said, "Goodbye, Mr. Benny, and have a nice trip." And you know, he went upstairs. I left, of course. He went upstairs, and he was halfway through packing before he realized he wasn't going anywhere. You know, these are the silly type of things. There was another one I remember where, in the body of the show, I had done something very frightening to Jack, because he had another singer on the program, and I was very jealous, and I was mad. So what I was doing, I was hiding in the bushes in his home at Beverly Hills, and I was throwing rocks with notes attached through the window. And he would read them, you know, and it'd say, "You're next," and this type of thing. "You think you can get away with it, but you can't," and all of this. Well, sure enough, I was caught by the police in Beverly Hills. At the end of the show, in the tag, he calls everybody out, and he called me out for a bow, and he said to me, "Dennis, what you did to me in the show tonight, frightening me the way you did, gave me an eerie feeling." And when I heard that, I said, "What did you say, Mr. Benny?" I said, he says, "What you did to me gave me an eerie feeling." And I said, "Gee, Mr. Benny, that's where I was born." He said, "Oh, Erie, Pennsylvania?" I said, "No, Feeling, West Virginia." Now, that's a lousy joke, but I could get away with it.
That's not really a bad
character
joke.
Character that I play.
It's not that bad a joke, actually.
Yeah.
The writers built such wonderful running gags into the show.
Yes.
I mean, you would have a line like that. I don't know whether this actually happened, but on many lines of that sort, they would build them into the scripts for weeks afterward.
That's right, yeah.
And you'd get just the same kind of laugh.
Well, I remember George Balza telling me this story, you know. George, I see quite frequently. He was one of the top writers on the Jack Benny Show and a great comedic mind. He wrote so much of the Benny Show, the really great things. And he, when they were trying to come up with an idea for the following week's program, and they were just, you know, they were groping and couldn't come up with something fresh and some new idea. And here, the other three writers and Jack was sitting there, and George said, "Wait a minute, because this is after World War II, and, you know, all the contests were now on and everything."
Mm.
George says, "Wait a minute. Why don't we have a contest? Why I Hate Jack Benny."
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other three writers looked at him. "Oh, my God, you've got to be out of your mind saying that in front of Jack." And Jack just sat there, you know. And all of a sudden, he said, "Wait a minute. Wait a minute." He says, "That is great. Well, we got 12 shows out of that contest."
I know, I've got
some. I dislike Jack Benny.
And you got...
That's just, you know, a thought that came up.
You got tons of mail, too.
And the thing carried on, the continuity, for 12 weeks.
Yeah, I seem to remember reading in one of the magazines, it was Time or Newsweek or something, they delivered the mail in bushel bales or something.
That's right. Oh, bushels. You know, Why I Dislike Jack Benny. And it was great. It excited so many people and got a tremendous rating all the time. There was another one. I remember George Balza was telling me about this. They had hired, right after, this is 1947, I think it was. The Notre Dame team was coming out here. They were unbeaten and everything else. They were going to play USC. So they were having Frank Leahy, the coach of Notre Dame, on the program. And about two or three days after they had made the commitment, Jack called George and he said, wait a minute. He says, now that we've got Frank Leahy, what are we going to do with him? You know. And George thought, and he said, well, wait a minute. Where are you going after the program this Sunday? And he said, well, I'm going east. I've got to do a program. You know, I got to do some shows or something, some benefit he was doing. And he said, why can't we have... he was flying, I think, and then coming back on the train. So he said, why can't we have, like, for instance, Frank Leahy is on the train. And they're talking about football. And Benny doesn't know who this is. He doesn't recognize that this is Frank Leahy. They never exchanged their identities.
Mm-hmm.
And Benny is telling Frank Leahy how he should... or somebody should do, whoever's got Notre Dame football team, or what they should do as far as coaching is concerned. So he's telling this whole thing to Frank Leahy. They have dinner that night in the diner, and it was a hilarious script.
Mm-hmm.
They got out of it, because it wasn't until the end of the script that Jack discussed the man he's talking to and telling him all about football, Frank Leahy. And it was, we had one of the biggest ratings that we ever had.
Yeah.
From that particular show. So it just shows you how, you know, things will happen.
Did your, so what we've been calling your silly image on the Benny Show, did that affect anything else that you wanted to do in your life? Your serious career or singing?
Oh, because there was a strange thing about being silly and stupid on the Benny Show. When Jack would say, sing, I could still sing a beautiful song, and people would differentiate that. The fact that I was silly and stupid, and yet being possessed of a voice and able to sing a beautiful song. So they differentiated that. I will say there were many times people would expect me to be the silly and naive thing, boy, but it didn't work away from Jack Benny. Anytime I did a guest appearance on radio with Eddie Cantor, or you name it, Jack Carson, or any of the others, Fred Allen, Bob Hope, to do that silly character did not work away from Benny, because Benny had a way that people would accept it, but they wouldn't with anybody else.
Well, how about your own show? Now, you played a character on that show called Dennis Day, who was not the Dennis Day, but was always arguing about the guy who was on the Jack Benny Show, right?
Right, yeah.
Did you feel that it did not work on that show, too, or what?
No, it worked all right there, because I was not silly and stupid, you know, and I was part of a whole the whole script, whereas on the Jack Benny Show, you only had a page and a half of dialogue. You know, when each of us, that's about all you got, because it was a half hour. But on my own, it was part of a story line.
Mm-hmm.
I was living in a boarding house, and I was, and my sweetheart was the daughter of the woman who ran the boarding house and her husband. So it was, I was part of a story line, and I worked at a drugstore. And a soda jerk, more or less, or whatever. So that was a little bit different. I was not really stupid. And
you still had some of the same kinds of lines, though, the sort of borderline silly lines, didn't you, in that series?
Yeah, but I also did a lot of impressions, and not impressions, but dialects. For instance, Hans Conried used to be on my show, God rest him. And he'd come in as the great Viennese so-and-so, and I would pretend to be another one from the, you know, from Germany, and I was a great psychiatrist, and he would be a great psychiatrist, and I was somebody, and I would usually put my foot in my mouth in some way or another, where he would discover that I really wasn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I could get away with a lot of those things on my own show, so I had a little more latitude.
You played a poor guy who worked in Willoughby's department store?
Yeah, Willoughby's, right.
And John Brown played Willoughby, right?
John Brown, uh-huh.
We were talking about John Brown on this show about a month ago. A wonderful character actor, played in Ozzie and Harriet and My Friend Irma, many shows like that.
Uh-huh.
Did you know him very well?
Oh, yes. Oh, sure. Yeah, from the program, you know. We never socialized, I knew him professionally quite well.
Bea Benaderet was another one?
Yeah, she was a great, great actress and a lovely woman.
She played the your girlfriend's mom, I believe.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And what exactly, did you say again, did Hans Conried do?
Hans Conried used to play various characters on my program, you know. Not regularly, but he'd be on there many times. As Gail Gordon would be on, you know. I've had so many of the wonderful people. But at that time in radio, you had such great characters.
Those guys, those two guys you just mentioned, Hans Conried and Gail Gordon, amazing ability to play anything, comedy, straight, anything you had.
Right, that's right. They could do anything.
When you were on Benny's program, I wonder if you could describe, did you sit in on the writer's sessions too, or?
No, I never did. No, that was Jack Benny and his writers, you know.
And they would do that, start right after the show, right?
Right. They would sit down and think what, or maybe they've been even discussing it beforehand, and what they might be doing for the following week. But usually after the program, which was a Sunday night, then on Monday they would have a meeting at Jack's house, and they'd start, because maybe they have already had an idea of the storyline of what they were going to do. But then they would start to kind of put things together, and usually Tackerberry and Josephsburg would write one section of the program. Then George Balzer and Sam Perrin would write another section, and then they would put the whole thing together.
Now, the show generally broke down into two sections. The first section was kind of the cast section, and then the second section was the story section, right?
Right, uh-huh.
And did the same two guys write the same section all the time, or did they switch off?
No, they'd switch off.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And then what was your routine as part of the cast? What did you do during the week?
Well, I had a lot of things to do, you know. To work on the song I would be singing for the following week and the week after and so forth, you know. And so we still had things to do, and I was doing some motion pictures at the time and also some recording, so I kept busy.
After the show went off, you were still associated with Benny for a while, weren't you?
Yes, I was. When the regular weekly program went off in 1964, and then I was associated with Jack on the specials. He would do two and three specials a year, and I was not on all of them, but I was on several of them up until the period when he passed away.
Did you associate personally with Jack at all? Some of the cast did not get that close to him. I'd heard that he was a very easy guy to talk to, but that he stayed kind of by himself.
Well, Jack had his circle of friends, you know, that he socialized with, that he saw regularly. People like Danny Kaye and George Burns, of course. And usually Jack would go over to Hillcrest every day for lunch, you know. In the latter part of his life, he gave up golf, I'd say in the last 15, almost 20 years of his life. He didn't play very much golf at all. But he still went there to the Hillcrest Country Club for lunch and meet a lot of his old friends, George Jessel, Danny Kaye, as I say, Gregory Peck, and Danny Thomas, and a lot of those people that he would see. I didn't socialize with Jack Benny, my wife and I, but I would, anytime I needed Jack, if I needed some advice or needed for him to do something, all I had to do was call him, and he'd say, boom, I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
Just 6 months before he died, my daughter, Eileen, sent a an invitation to her wedding, and we were having a reception at our home, just family members. And Jack called after he received the invitation. He says, I can't make the wedding. And he says, but I'll be at the reception. And sure enough, he had a chauffeur drive him out. And he spent about an hour, 2 hours here, and he was leaving for another reception, and then to go that night to Portland for a concert with the Portland Symphony, and then over to Spokane for the World's Fair. So anytime, Jack and I had a great empathy between one another. I loved him, and I respected this man, and he just treated me like a son. And he was just a glorious man and a wonderful man.
His image of being the tightwad, he, in his private life, actually bent over backwards to counter that, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, because all through the years, you know, on radio and television, he'd been portrayed as a tightwad and a miser. And there's one in every family. Either we got an uncle, a brother, sister, aunt, whatever, or we know somebody who's really a little close with a dollar, and that's why you can get so much humor out of it. And Jack was the opposite. He was a very generous man, because every Christmas we get lovely gifts from Jack for the kids and for Peg and I and all, you know, for the family.
You mean he didn't really give Don Wilson that pair of shoelaces that he supposedly gave
him? Oh, gosh. No, that was all...
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Jack was a very generous man.
He appeared on behalf of many charities and for many symphony orchestras free too, didn't he?
Oh yes. Well, we're all called upon to do all kinds of benefits for various charities, and you just try to do as many as you possibly can. But he raised well over $1 million for various symphonies throughout the United States and Canada. Of course, the violin was his great love. You know, he started out in show business as a violinist, and then comedy became greater than his violin playing, but he would have given his right arm to be a concert violinist. And I remember Jack telling, it was Isaac Stern whom Jack idolized, and Carnegie Hall was on the block. They were going to tear it down, and Jack went back to New York City for a benefit to save Carnegie Hall. It was put on by Isaac Stern and all the artists there. And Jack was in the wings in his white tie and tails, waiting for his turn to go out. And Isaac Stern was looking at him, and he said, Jack, you look the epitome of the world's greatest violinist. Hmm. And he said, Jack, it's a damn shame you have to play. Well, Jack fell right down on the floor, left, screaming. You know, he idolized Isaac Stern, and, of course, he loved the violin, and he tried and played. He practiced 3 hours a day. He studied, and he tried as best he possibly could to play whatever he was playing as well as he possibly could, because it would not be funny if he tried to hook it up.
Hmm.
And with a symphony, I mean, this was very important.
Yasha Heifetz was another one he had a pretty good relationship with, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, yes, uh-huh. Yeah. He just idolized all of these great artists.
I think you just answered the question I was going to ask, is just how good a violinist was he, actually?
Well, Jack was a very good violinist, you know. I mean, he could play well. Not as well as an Isaac Stern or a Heifetz or any of those. I mean, a concert violinist he wasn't. But he could play well, and he practiced and tried extremely hard. He practiced at least 3 hours a day. He had a Guarnerius. He had a Stradivarius, which I understand was given to the Los Angeles Symphony on his death. They were willed to the symphony. But he tried, and he could play well.
You know, that's another, maybe that sheds a little more light on his character in a way, because anybody who takes something as seriously as you say he took violin, the violin,
oh,
would not normally allow something like that to become an element of comedy?
No.
It
would be, as he's even said, if I tried to do a cadenza or whatever I was playing and tried to be funny and tried to play it badly, they would expect me to play it badly, but I must try the best I can, because it would not be humorous if you tried and do, hit clinkers and everything else purposely. So Jack tried and worked very hard at being a good violinist, let me put it that way.
How well did you know Fred Allen? I know you guys were on the opposite
posts.
Oh, I love
Fred. He was a lovely man. I knew him through the Jack Benny program. I'd had dinner with he and his wife, Portland, many times in New York when I'd be visiting there, and saw him whenever he'd be out here. I'd see him quite a number of times. He was a great comedic genius, again, because he wrote all of the Allen Valley. That was all of his. He would write all of that. And he was really a brilliant man, a brilliant writer, and a satirist, I think, on life and on our mores and everything else. So
his
really a great man.
I'm sorry. Oh, his friendship with Jack Benny was... There was, of course, no real feud.
Oh, no.
But they, being at opposite ends of the country, Fred Allen always worked from New York, right?
Yes, right.
The friendship that they had was never really as close as some writers have made it out to be, was it?
Oh, yes, I think they were. Oh, they both had great respect for one another.
But, I mean, they weren't intimates, like they didn't get together all the time.
I think they did when they go to New York. Like, if Jack went to New York, he'd get together with Fred. And he was on his program many times, and vice versa. If Fred come out here, he'd be on the Jack Benny, which he did not come out that often, you know, because he did not like California. He did not like Hollywood. He hated it, you know.
That was a pretty good trip in those days, wasn't it? I mean, you had to get on a train and go for what?
Well, that's 3 days and four nights, usually. So that's a long trip. I remember the first time I went back to New York after I'd first joined the Jack Benny show, and I flew on a DC-3, and it was 23 and a half hours. You know, you go 375 miles, and boom, you land. And then you wait around for 20 minutes or a half hour. Then you take off and go another 375 miles. And that's the way you hopped your way across the country.
Hmm. Do you have any idea where Portland Hoffa is now?
She's married to Joe Rines, who was a former producer of the Judy Canova show and many other radio shows. And they travel. They go all around the world, and they're both in... And very happy and great health.
Yeah, when was the last time you saw her?
Portland. I haven't seen Portland in several years now.
How does she feel about talking about the old days? I know some folks don't do that very well.
Portland?
Yeah.
I really couldn't answer that for you. I don't know how she'd feel.
How about Mary Livingston? She was always fairly uncomfortable being on the show, wasn't she?
Well, yeah, because... Mary wasn't well, you know. I remember many times we'd just about get through the program and she'd just collapse right on the stage there, you know. And she was not too well, but I understand she's in excellent health. She visits her friend Claudette Colbert every once in a while down in Barbados. I see the Reagans were there spending the weekend with them, and Mary is evidently gets out quite a bit. I haven't seen her in a number of years. I don't believe since I've talked to her, but I haven't seen her since Jack passed away.
Hmm. You keep in touch with Mel Blanc?
Yes, I was at a luncheon for him about 3 weeks or a month ago for the Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters, of which I am a member. Gave a luncheon honoring Mel Blanc. And there were about 1,500 people turned out for that luncheon over at the Sportsman's Lodge in the Valley, and it was hilarious. I mean, it was just absolutely great.
Do you know how to get in touch with him?
Mel Blanc?
Yeah.
I don't have his phone number, John.
Yeah, I got an agent's number, so I guess I could get him through that.
Yeah, his son has an agency, Joel. Joel Blanc has a commercial agency.
Joel, J-O-E-L?
J-O-E-L, yes. Uh-huh.
And Mel is handled by his son?
Yeah, what about Frank Nelson? Have you talked to him?
I talked to Frank about a month ago. He's wonderful.
Yeah. Did he have Mel's number?
He might have. You know, I didn't ask him that.
Why don't you call the Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters? I don't have their number here.
I've got it on file.
Huh?
I've got it on file.
And talk to them and ask for Mel's number. I'm sure they'd be happy to give it to you. Or anybody else that you might want to talk to. You know, tell them who you are. And of course, the fact this is old-time radio you're talking about. And
now, they don't have a full-time office, do they?
No, I'm just trying to think. Jean DeVivier is with the office there, but or call Ralph Edwards. What about Ralph Edwards?
Sure.
Now, there's another one. The Ralph Edwards office is in Hollywood, on Hollywood Boulevard and Highland.
Uh-huh.
And you could talk to the office there, call Ralph.
Is he still active?
Oh, Ralph is very much active, yeah. He's producing, of course. And he's got all his people. And one thing about Ralph, he's a very loyal person. Anybody who was with him in radio and in television on Truth of Consequences and all those programs are still with him today.
What do you think of the stuff that's being done today? I mean, we don't have any radio anymore to speak of. Television doesn't seem to compare very well, does it?
Well, it's a completely different medium. I think it eats up material much faster because once you see it, how are you going to disguise it to show it again? On radio, you could disguise a lot of situations and it could be changed around. And your imagination used. You were using your imagination. Today on TV, you don't have to use any imagination. My kids always say to me about radio, well, how could you see it? Well, actually, we did. We all sat around the radio, and we watched the radio on a Sunday night, you know, or whatever night it was.
Now, your kids, when they were growing up, did you have copies of the show that you could play for them? Did they understand it that way, or what?
I had some, yeah, but they weren't interested in listening to them, you know. mostly because my kids' television was in. When they were born, and most of them as they were growing up, was all TV. So radio, the only thing they know is DJs, you know.
Hmm. Are they interested now?
Beg pardon?
Are they interested now, or sometimes...
Not particularly, no.
Sometimes as kids get older, you know, they form an interest.
Yeah, well, that seems to be happening, I guess. A lot in colleges and universities, people are curious, you know, what was radio like, and what happened, you know.
When Phil Harris had his own show, in fact, there were three of you. Mel Blanc had his show for a while, too.
Yeah, he had it for about a year, I guess, or so.
Why did Phil leave? Was it because of Jack's move to CBS?
That was one of the reasons, I think, when he wanted Phil to come over to CBS with him. And Phil said no. I guess that was... whatever reason, I don't know, but he said, I won't move over there. I'm happy with NBC, and he wanted to stay with NBC, so that never transpired, his moving over. So Jack then had to get Bob Crosby, I guess, was the first one.
Now, your own show, what day of the week was that on, do you remember?
At first it was on a Wednesday, and we were on there for a couple of years, and then we switched over to Saturday. So we were on Saturday night.
You didn't really have any of the problems that Phil had because his was back-to-back there for a while on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, the problem that Phil had, too, in the beginning, they didn't find their niche with it, you know. The writers didn't. And finally they did come up with it, and it was a very successful show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking with Dennis Day. It's been a long time since I said that. We've been chatting away here for about 50 minutes. It's now 20 minutes until 5, and this is KNUS in Denver once again. I tend to get lost in these interviews and forget I'm on the radio sometime.
Yeah.
Can you think of any particular anecdote or other than the ones we've talked about that really kind of leaps out at you, that kind of epitomizes your tenure with Benny?
Well, I doubt it. There aren't too many things that I can think of outside of what I've spoken about. But they were glorious, wonderful years, the happiest years, I think, of my life. That I'm very grateful that Jack gave me my beginning in show business. He stuck with me, and I miss the man. I find it very difficult to realize that at 7 years this past December the 26th that he passed away, because he always was so vibrant and so young. You know, you always thought of him as not 39, but I'd say in his early 60s. I never thought of him as being almost 81 when he passed away. That he was so, you know, Jack never liked to think back. He always said, let's not talk about vaudeville, never talk about old days and all of that, and the palace and early radio. That's yesterday's newspaper. The minute he was through with the program, Jack's whole idea was, what am I going to do next? Who am I going to have on my next program? He was always thinking ahead. I think that's probably the secret of why he had that longevity, really, and seemingly looked so young and felt young, because mentally he was thinking ahead. I think George Burns is pretty much the same. Here's a man 86 years of age, and he's not thinking of retiring or anything else.
Even all those cigars.
What am I going to do next? What girl am I going to take out? Whatever, you know.
Even the cigars, that don't seem to have slowed him down much.
No.
Does he really smoke all those?
Does he? No, that's just a prop.
Hmm.
Jack used to smoke cigars, and then he gave them up about 20 years before he died, and because a doctor told him they were bad for his circulation. It wasn't the fact. Jack would light a cigar, and they use it as a prop, and take a couple of puffs on it. And it was really something, even George Burns the same way. Give them time to think. If somebody made a remark, so they had time to think, and for them to think, an answer, or just to give a little emphasis to what they were going to say. So George doesn't smoke that much, I'm sure. Mm. And Jack didn't, really. But it's amazing what George does. He
it sure is.
Forward, you know.
Listen, I have a couple more questions I'd like to ask you. You also appeared on other shows. I've got some tapes of you on Suspense.
Yeah.
You remember doing that?
I remember doing that, yeah.
And Lux Radio Theater.
Lux Radio Theater.
And you were on Kraft Music Hall with Al Jolson.
Right.
And I wonder if you have any thoughts about how those experiences compared with your long-running role on Jack Benny.
Oh, they were, first of all, you know, it was fun to get away from the Benny thing, like on Suspense. I still played as semi-naive, but it was a chance to do a little acting or whatever you want to call it. And Jolson, it was a kick to be with one of the greats in show business. And to be with him and to work with him and to know him. That to me was something I can treasure. And all the other shows, Kraft Music Hall, you know, with Bing. And he was on the Benny Show, as a matter of fact, and that quartet that we had. And where I told him to get down where the money is. because he was singing pretty high. And I said, you better get down where the money is.
Actually, I remember your role on Suspense as being fairly intense. The Lux Radio Theater, I think, you did a thing called Top of the Morning.
Top of the Morning, yeah.
With Ann Blythe, who was your sister-in-law?
Yeah, who became my sister-in-law, right.
What can you tell us about her? I mean, I don't know.
Ken is more or less semi-retired, I'd say. She does theater in the summertime. She plays things like Showboat and Kiss Me, Kate, and still has a glorious voice. Very happily married to my brother. They have 5 children and one grandchild, and they're expecting another grandchild shortly. So we see them quite often, especially around the holiday time. And we talk to one another, of course, frequently.
I had a show on once with her. I think it was a Lux show. And somebody called in and said she was originally from Denver. Is that true?
No. Anne was born and raised in New York, in Mount Kisco, New York.
Or did she go to school out here or have any connections with here at all?
Don't think she did, no.
Okay, well, maybe that was a mistake then.
Yeah, I think it probably was.
Any other thoughts that I haven't asked you about? That's a...
Oh, I think you've covered the field. You're going to have a telephone bill. Holy smoke.
Well, it's Sunday, you know. I don't know whether the Ma Bell gives us special rates for Easter. I doubt it, but it's certainly been worth it talking with you. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and I really thank you for coming on.
Not at all, John. And I would suggest that you call Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters and keep after it, you know, and you'll get a lot of the other telephone numbers of people who are in radio. And
okay.
It's been a pleasure talking to you and to all your listeners.
Well, thanks much again for being on.
Thank you, John.
We'll see you.
All right. Happy Easter again.
Okay. Well, Dennis Day from Los Angeles, talking about the Jack Benny Show and other things.